So we're continuing our conversation with the candidates. Next up, we welcome to the program candidate for councillor at large in Quincy, Herbert Ali Shaughnessy is joining us. Great to see you, Ali. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a little while, actually, since you and I caught up.
Yeah, 2017, the last time I ran for Ward 6 councillor.
Right.
I did it in 15, and the judge stopped it, if you remember that.
I do remember that, yes.
6 days to go.
Yes.
And then after that, I ran again in 2015. I lost a very close race to Bill Harris, who's still the Ward 6 councillor.
Right. So now you're seeking at large.
At large. Yeah. I figured the third time's a charm, you know.
Okay. Talk about why.
Well, I would tell you the reason why is I love the city very, very much. And it's kind of in my blood. My grandfather ran in 1952.
Really?
Yeah, he ran. And in those days, there was like 30 councillors. It was a different form of government.
Hmm.
The exact form, I'm not sure. But
here in Quincy?
Here in Quincy,
okay.
1952 or 1953. He lived in Marymount with my grandmother at 165 Samerset Avenue.
Huh.
And if there was 30 going, he came in like 31.
Okay.
Right, so it's in my blood.
Yeah.
And that's on my grandfather's side, my dad's side of the family. On my mother's side of the family, my grandmother on my mom's side, she was actually the cook at the Elks in Quincy Center, right near the Quincy Sun.
No kidding.
And she ended up becoming very successful because as she was a cook over there, she made chicken pot pies, and the members, the Elks members, convinced her to sell them to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually got bought out by like some supermarket chain. It was Ma Ferguson's chicken pot pies.
Okay.
From Quincy. She sold her house to Arthur Tobin.
Oh,
so I have political blood in my body, and I love the city of Quincy, and I want to give back to the city that's given me so much because I've been blessed. I've really been blessed, Joe.
Sounds like you have deep roots in the city, but for folks who might not be familiar with it, give us a little history of Ali Shaughnessy.
Yeah. So yeah. I went to Braintree High School. I have a twin brother, Tom. We went to Braintree High School, but my mom and my dad were both from Quincy, so on the weekends, they came to Quincy all the time from Braintree because all their friends were in Quincy. So my dad was best friends with Arthur Morrissey, Mike Morrissey's dad, and Mary and his wife was my mom's best friend. So every weekend, we would spend at the Morrissey's house on Colby Road in the summertime, and then we'd walk down to Squamish Yacht Club, and we'd go sailing.
Mm.
And Marion was such a nice friend to my mom because my mom had some problems. Good woman, but she had some problems. And Marion said, I'll take care of the boys. And we could stay at the Morrissey's house. It just was another couple of mouths to feed. They didn't care. They had all kinds of kids. And we would walk down and go sailing down at Squamish Yacht Club. So I had a very enjoyable childhood. I got to grow up in both Braintree and Quincy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I call Quincy my home. I've been here the most. All my roots are really from here in Quincy, and I want to give back to it. Been 2 years now.
Is it?
It goes by pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that tremendously because I feel as though I'm getting very involved. A lot of these developers that I have met or as I go along, I've met over the years in my own business. So as you may know or not know, I own my own crane service. And, of course, my family was in the crane service business. I'm a local 4 union crane operator. I own Alley Cat Crane Service, the nickname under Alley.
Sure.
So I volunteer for the planning board. So I have the opportunity to really see these developments and the developers when they come to the city and they have to go in front of the board. And it's not a slam dunk by any means.
Yes.
It's a volunteer board.
Yes.
And we question everything that we can and what we think might be wrong, might be right. And we'll throw out different ideas. And if we like something, we tell them. If we don't like it, I'm at this point in my life and at this age, Joe, I'm not afraid to tell them that I don't like something. I go back to the drawing board. That's
okay.
Why it's called planning board.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and let's do it again.
Yeah.
So.
Would you be able to continue to serve if you were?
You know, it's an appointed position.
Yeah,
I serve at the behest of the mayor.
Right.
I would hope that I could continue on, but it may. If I'm fortunate and I get elected as a councillor at large, I would think that the mayor would open that up for another position for another person to come in. So I'd like to stay on until the election, and if I win, then you know I'll send in my resignation if the mayor would like me to.
I see.
And if I don't win, then maybe I could stay on and still stay as an active person on the planning board.
Sure. Okay.
But either way, I'll stay active doing something in the city, win or lose.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. If you do win, can we talk a little bit about what you'd like to do on the council?
I'm sorry?
If you do win, what would you like to do as a city councilor?
I think mainly that like my thoughts on the city council is that if we look at how Quincy's growing and how rapidly it grows, and all the developers that are coming down here, because it's no secret to any of the developers in Boston that Quincy is open for business. And you can see that with all the growth. And I know it's very difficult to balance, and being on the planning board, that's really a balancing act, right? Because you have a developer that'll come in that'll want to spend money in the community and build, 200 apartments with retail on the first floor, and, they're looking for, some type of relief on parking and so forth because you're inside the MBTA inclusion zone.
Yes.
And so it's I'm kind of from Missouri, though, Like, they'll say to you, hey, we only need one parking spot for every bedroom, and we want to do two bedrooms for each parking spot, and because no one's going to bring their car here. And I'm kind of like the... I'm the pessimist. I'm going to say, no, I think they're all going to bring their cars here. Okay. And even though they're close to the T and they can walk to the T, it's a tough balance. And traffic, it's if you think about things that affect the city the most, if we talk about traffic, transparency of government, and taxes, all three, and not necessarily in that order. Because if we go with, like, taxes, let's talk on the tax side of the equation first. So if you bring in more and more developers to the city, and it does affect the traffic, even though you may have the best studies and say it's not going to affect it too much, it does to a certain degree. But you have to remember, we're a pass-through city as well. I know that sounds a little bit derogatory, oh, you're just passing through, but it's true. I mean, there's a lot of people that travel from Boston in the north traveling south to Hingham, Weymouth, and so forth, and they travel through our city. They may not even stop here. Mm-hmm. But they go down Quincy Shore Drive, or they go up Hancock Street, they jump on a 3A. So that is an increase in traffic. Now, I don't know how you could count, which cars go to Hingham and so forth. And for sure, there's a lot of traffic coming through, but it's not all our traffic. So it's kind of like, so it's a balance. It's a balance there. And we're growing. And as you bring developers in, and they come to us with their plans, for all these developers that come in and they produce more housing stock, you'd like to think that with more housing stock, you have a larger supply. Now, if you have a larger supply, you would think, economically, you'd have a reduced cost, right? So it becomes a little bit more affordable. And that large housing stock presents more and gives the city more taxes. So if we can bring in more residential taxes by the developers coming in, hopefully it can offset the taxes that we're already paying on our properties, especially for the elderly, Joe. And I hate to tell you this, but I'm one of those people that are in the elderly, right? Because, I mean, the average person, their highest earning years are 25 to 65. So they buy a house at 25 years old. It gets assessed at $500,000. They're paying the taxes on the $500,000 for the next 40 years, hopefully. They can pay their taxes, they make a lot of money, they do well, everybody's healthy and happy. You'd like to stay in your house. We have to figure out a way, and I don't know the way, but I can tell you I have some ideas about it, and it's not necessarily my idea. My friend, Mr. Kiley, an elderly guy, 84 years old, lives out in Squanum. He came to me with a brown paper bag, ripped off Stop and Shop, wrote his notes and said, we have to do something for the elderly for taxes. It continues to go up, but we have fixed income.
Yeah.
So how do we what do we do to offset that?
Well, I mean, a residential tax exemption has been suggested. Is that something?
It has. It has been suggested. Yeah, and I think, and if they could take advantage of that, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay.
I think that's probably a good thing to do. But that then goes to the next generation as well.
Right.
But that's okay, because we want the elderly to stay in their houses that they paid for and taken care of and so forth. And if we can try and keep more elderly in their houses, that's very important for the quality of life. They've spent all this time, energy, and effort taking care of their properties. You hate to see them lose it because the taxes go up. And then they don't really want to go and get that tax exemption. Mm-hmm. So what Mr. Kiley had suggested, and I was all ears when he told me this, and I don't know, I'm not a municipal finance person, but his idea was that if you, let's, and we would have to do this probably with the state legislature. So if we have somebody, again, like I was saying, Joe, they buy a house at 25 years old, their highest earning potential is for the next 40 years or so, not 40, 65. So now they're retired, they're on a fixed income. Let's take that house that may have gone from $500,000, and I'm just doing for easy math,
sure,
like round numbers. So it goes from $500,000 to $1 million in that stretch of the 40 years. Mm-hmm. You're 65 years old, you have a house that's worth $1 million.
That's not out of the question today.
It's not out of the question. Now, our infrastructure here and our investment in the city that's happened over the past 20 years has increased the value of that house. Mm-hmm. But what it hasn't done is increased how much more money that homeowner makes to pay the increase in the assessment, right? It's off balance. So now what if we took, if we could figure out a formula, and someone a lot smarter than me has to do this, figure out, so they reach 65 years of age and they're still in the house with their family or whatever, or alone or married, but it's their house. Their income is now fixed. Take the value of the house, let's say it's $1 million, mm-hmm, for easy math, and go back to the value of the house that they bought of that at $500,000. So now let's go back to the $500,000 and call the assessment at $500,000.
Okay.
Let them pay the assessment at the $500,000 value and then cap how much it would be every year for the remainder of their life. So let's cap it at $300, no higher.
I see. Okay.
In increments. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that tax is $300.
No, I understand.
I'm saying that the increment would be no more than $300. So for the next, let's say that person's 65. So let's hope they live to be 85, maybe more, but that's another 20 years,
okay,
right?
So kind of a graduated scale.
So that at the very end, right, the most their taxes would ever go up again is $6,000 over the next 20 years,
okay,
right? And it's back to that original value. Now when the house sells, Joe, right, that person has died, mm-hmm, and then the wife or the husband has died, mm-hmm, and now the children have come, but they buy the house. And even if they inherit the house, it goes to the value that what the house is newly assessed at.
Okay.
Don't go back to 500. Now we go up to that, if it's another 20 years, at that point it might be $1.2 million. Hmm. Start the assessment at $1.2 million.
Interesting.
Now that child, who's now 25, 45, whatever, 55, is going forward, they then hit 65, and let's go back again. So it would take a lot of people, I think, to maybe do the math on it and to watch it, and you'd have to make sure that nobody's cheating on it and stuff like that. But we have to do something because the values in the homes are outpacing the income that are coming into the homes, and the elderly are really strained.
So what I take from this conversation, Ali, is that you listen to constituents.
I would.
When they have concerns.
I do.
And you'd bring them to the council.
I will.
Yeah.
I would. I do. I will.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, isn't it all about really transparency and listening to the constituents to say when they tell you something's wrong? Well, that's what the whole idea of it is.
So, right? To that end, do you think the council has been transparent up to this point?
I think that the council has been transparent to a certain degree. Do I think that mistakes have been made and stuff? Well, nobody's completely perfect, and you know, I mean, Ted Williams himself didn't hit 1,000, right? So. Yeah, there may have been some. But having said that, do I think that we need more transparency? I would say that we have transparency. We do need some more, maybe some more public hearings in front of the city council. But we have to remember that we're a city, right? We're not a small town government that has selectmen where everybody gets to stand up in front of the microphone and talk for 20 minutes. I mean, we would, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't allow to have public, but you can't slow down the process in the sense that you don't want to trip it up. So we should have more public hearings. I agree with that.
Okay.
But we have to be mindful of the fact that we are a city. This is a going concern. This is a business. You know, it's a growing city. So having said that, I know it sounds like I want my cake and eat it too. I want transparency. I want more public hearings. But I don't want them to slow down the process in the sense that, yeah, let's slow it down when we need to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hold on, let's have another discussion about this.
Okay.
Because it seems funny to me.
Okay, all right.
You know, what's the matter with that, right?
Did you want to comment at all on a couple of the citywide issues that have come up the past year? I'm thinking the raises, salaries.
Okay, all right, let's talk about the raises.
Yep.
So, I don't think anybody could argue that the mayor of Quincy doesn't deserve a raise. I certainly believe that he deserves a raise. I mean, he hadn't had a raise in 10 years. Now, is it excessive as to where he's going? It's all a matter of opinion on how much he works and so forth. But let's think about this for a moment. The average CEO in America that runs a business that does $500 million, $400 million, $500 million, it really is a tipping scale of $500 million. Because if you're at $500 million, right, you go into a whole other scale. But let's say it's $400 million. Now, we do $500 million a year, if you consider our budget. Mm-hmm. This is a business, right? Quincy's a business, right? $650,000 for a CEO that does business in the $400,000 range. Mm-hmm. When you get up into the $500 million range, it's just off the chart. Now, do I think that the mayor of Quincy deserves to have $600,000? I don't believe that. No, I don't. Do I think that the mayor should have more than a 3% raise? Because there's a group now that I think, is it Quincy Votes?
No.
Fair
Raises Committee.
Fair Raises, yeah. Okay. Which I applaud them for their efforts, and I hope they're successful. But I would question their mathematics on it, because why would the mayor of Quincy only get, I think they want to give him a 2%. 2% every year for the past, like, back to his raise.
Correct.
10 years, 2%.
Yes. Yep.
But yet, the firefighters, the policemen, the teachers, they're roughly around a 3%. I mean, I think that every year for inflation is between 3 and 4%. This year, I think we're right at around 4%. So why would the mayor be any less than those that he governs?
Okay.
Those, not that he governs, but he's the boss, right? Right?
I guess the question came up as the process for how the
I think was the process flawed in retrospect. I mean, I wasn't involved with the process.
Right.
Obviously, I'm
right.
not a city councilor yet. I hope to be. I think that it was probably a flawed process. But having said that, you shouldn't be penalizing the mayor because it's a flawed process per se. He certainly didn't have the intention of trying to flaw the process.
Okay.
And nobody in the city can tell me that this guy doesn't deserve a mayor. I mean, he works 24/7. We have people on the payroll that get paid a lot more than the mayor does, and the mayor's on call 24/7. Right? The fire alarm doesn't go off, the police alarm doesn't go off. Guess what? He has to answer the phone call because he is the chief executive officer. He's responsible for the entire city, so why shouldn't he be paid for it?
Okay.
In a fair, right? So never mind 2%. He should be at 4%. Go back 10 years and give him 4%.
Okay.
At least then he'll be in the top probably 5% of pay for the city, so that his chief of police, his chief of fire, or his superintendent of the schools, they're all kind of like together there. I mean, that's what I think would be fair.
Okay.
Because in the private sector, they'd be paying him $600,000 a year.
Sure. As a counselor, how would you kind of communicate with constituents, Allie? How would that happen?
I think I would use the office of being the counselor to reach out, email. We have, of course, the Quincy Access TV. I could come down and see you, Joe.
Absolutely.
If I had any issues, and I actually enjoy this, so I'd like to talk to you, and I'd be happy to talk to the constituents via this. And they, of course, would have my cell phone
okay. And
my email, and it isn't. I mean, I own my own business, Joe. My phone's never off, and I'm in the crane and the rigging business, and sometimes I get calls, you know, that something may have, they need a crane at 2 o'clock in the morning for a fire or whatever. I mean, not necessarily here. I service inside of, you know, the 495 belt, so it's, I never shut it off, you know.
Sure.
So I'm here to answer to the constituents, to the people that would like me.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to share with folks right now?
I think that the city of Quincy is a terrific place to live and to raise a family. We have a wonderful school system. We have a fire department that is well-equipped, a police department that I think does an excellent job. The crime rate in the city has come down considerably, I believe. I mean, you can go to downtown Quincy now, Joe, and it's very comfortable. And I'll be the first to tell you, back in 2015, when the mayor proposed putting in the new park, the Hancock Park, mm-hmm. I was against it.
Hmm.
I said, oh, it's too much money. And, you know, why would we want to change it? After it's done, I said, oh, my God, this come out beautiful. And it's become a centerpiece to this very historic city. And why shouldn't it be? Why shouldn't we have the best of anything? I mean, we're the seventh largest city in Massachusetts. And I would argue that we're the best city in Massachusetts. For sure. I love the city of Quincy. So, yeah, I think Everything is good. I want a little bit more transparency. I'd like to see it when contracts come up for the different departments, the police, fire, teachers, and so forth. I'd like to see it that their contracts get settled, you know, quickly and not dragged out for a long time, you know. But again, it's all about communications, which comes down to transparency too, right? But I think overall, no, I'm very happy to live here and very happy to raise family here.
What's your campaign strategy going forward?
Knocking a lot of doors. Yeah. Listening to the constituents, and you know, you hit a point there when you're talking about the raises. The people are upset about the raises, no doubt about it. They're upset too about the statues. You know, that seems to have created a real buzzsaw. You know, I mean, I as far as the statues go, you know, St. Florian, as we know, is the saint for firefighters. My dad was a volunteer firefighter. Back in Quincy when they used to have volunteers here. And, you know, as far as the police go, St. Michael, he's also on the airborne. I mean, the 82nd Airborne, they look at St. Michael as the guardian saint for them as well, and the police officers look for it too. I mean, if we take out a dollar bill and we open up the dollar bill and it says, "In God We Trust" on it. So the United States government thinks that it's okay to have "In God We Trust" on it. But here in the city of Quincy, we might think that's not, you know, the connotation. We don't want to have it so religious. I don't look at it as being a religious statue. I look at it as being artwork on a building that's going to be here for 100 years. Is it excessive? I'm not in that business. I'm a crane guy and a rigger. I move equipment. You know, I don't build things like that. That's not my job. However, I would tell you as a city councilor, I would want to look at what's going to be put there and what it's going to cost. And if I thought it was excessive, I would say, hold on here. You know, can we do something a little bit better?
So there's the transparency issue again.
There's a transparency issue again. And I don't believe that it was with intent that the statues were done like that, because these big projects, these public projects, like libraries and so forth, there's always an art element in the project. But that's typically at the end of the project, which is where we find ourselves, right? So you don't know usually when you start the project what is going to be the Monet on the wall or what is going to be the Rembrandt. You don't know that, and then as the project goes on, then it comes up. So that perhaps should have been transmitted to the council sooner.
All right, fair enough. You'll be on the ballot on September 2nd, preliminary.
September 2nd, yeah. I'll be on the ballot. Remember this, Joe, right? I'm last on the ballot, but first for the voters.
Okay.
So when you go in there, you see Shaughnessy in the last. Last on the ballot, first for the vote.
Okay, and you'll appear on the ballot as Herbert Ali Shaughnessy III.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, my nickname, Ali. Yeah, that's right. I look forward to it. I'm hoping that people come out and vote. I mean, democracy does not work unless people vote. The last time we had a primary, Joe, I think, like this, was 15, I think. You would know better than me, but I think 15. And I think we had like 14.5% turnout. That's a pretty poor turnout. Now, unfortunately, September 2nd, as you know, is the Tuesday after Labor Day.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's our decision. I'm not sure. I believe it's the Secretary of State's decision. I think it's his call. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's our call, because I would like to think that we would say, instead of the Tuesday after Labor Day, let's make it the Tuesday after, right? So that more people, if they're away on vacation or coming up from the Cape or down from Maine, they'd be available to vote, because democracy doesn't work unless you vote. So please get out and vote. That's what we need. We need people to vote.
All right. Thanks for stopping by, Ali. Good to talk to you.
Joe, great to see you again. And hopefully you'll be interviewing me after I'm a city councilor at large.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Joe.
And thanks for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano, and we'll see you next time.